Welcome to the Marketing Stir podcast by Stirista, where we chat with industry leaders and get their take on the challenges facing the market. And maybe we'll have a little fun along the way. On this week's episode of the Marketing Stir, Andrew Barbuto, senior agency lead at Basis Technologies, joins Vincent to discuss his experiences and strategies in sales, the shift from cable TV advertising to CTV, and his upcoming book.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is me, Vincent Petrofessa, the Vice President of B2B Products and Partnerships here at Stirista, and this is the Marketing Stir. That's why you're hearing me. What other reason would you hear me? Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe we were talking, we met at a conference. Who knows? We were just at Advertising Week, and people listened to the podcast. So many people came up to us. You would think that Ad Week would have us do a live podcast. Come on, Ad Week, get it out there. Get with it. But it was so good. It was fun. AJ, my co-host, was in town moderating a panel. He's not here today. He has other things to do, but I've got this. I was at Ad Week. There was a great panel on CTV with some former guests of the podcast, Gretchen Littlefield and Sarah Zarrell, recent guests. They were on the panel. I missed it. I was flying back from Seattle to watch the New York Giants win a game. I know if you've listened to this podcast, you're like, wow, that's rare, but they won a game. It was fun. What a good time it was. So let's talk about Stirista for just 1 second. That's it. We don't take advertising in this podcast. We just talk about Stirista. That's who I work for. That's who does the podcast. We are a marketing technology company. We own our own business-to-business data, business-to-consumer data. We help companies utilize that data through our technology, our own ESP, DSP. We help you get new customers. Email me, vincent@stirista.com. That is how confident I am. I just gave you my email address, and boy, are you using it. Sometimes not for what I intended to, but hey, at least you're listening. Also, ladies and gentlemen, very special guest, because I met this person in person, right? I met him in real life. Remember that, when people just met in real life? But I heard him on, he's done a lot of work with us at the Marketing Club of New York. Great panelist, a lot of great information. We said, hey, you got to be on the podcast. He's also an author. And maybe we'll see some of you, if you're speaking of the Marketing Club of New York, November 7th, Silver Apple Awards. I'm hosting, yours truly. Maybe you'll see this guy there. You'll certainly see my co-host, AJ, there, because he's getting an award. But we have an amazing guest for you today. He is the senior agency lead at Basis Technologies. I saw Basis all over Ad Week, and we'll talk about that. And also the author. How often do we have authors on? I love it. Top sales producer, how to crush your sales quota. Love it. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend, Andrew Barbuto, what's going on?
What's going on? Thanks for having me, Vince.
It's great seeing you, my friend. You know, you've done a lot of great things for, you know, Marketing Club of New York. You always step up and speak at our events. And then we got to talking. I was like, you know, I like this guy, fellow Italian. I was like, look at this guy doing good, doing great things here. And an author. But like, Andrew, before we get into the book, I want to really talk about that. Talk to us about your role at Basis. I saw Basis all over. There's like ads like all over the city. It, for at Ad Week, I think I saw it on a taxi. Am I wrong about that? I think
no, you're right. You're right.
It's crazy. Tell us about Basis and your role within the company.
Yeah, it shows they're working. So that's good to hear. Yeah, Basis has been doing a lot more of the events. You know, you may have noticed if you were at Cannes or possible, we can get into that. My role is as senior agency leads. I work with agencies and advertisers. There's a couple different ways that we partner with them. So there's self-service and managed services. Well, they'll either license our software Basis, and they will use it to streamline all of their campaign processes in one place across all paid digital media, not just programmatic. But we also have a built-in DSP, so they can activate programmatic in the same place that they could do planning across all channels, reporting, billing. And so it's really meant to streamline the processes. That's one way. The other way is managed services, like I said. So we can both help with the execution of any form of paid digital media that clients need. And we can also help with transitioning. So I know we'll get into this, but basically we can help with, if a client would like to do in-house paid media, we can help with that transition. So we have hybrid models for that as well. And my job is to pull sales cycle. So finding new clients, you know, having them, meeting with them, bring them in-house, giving them demos, finding out which partnership model makes the most sense for them, and then ultimately continuing to build on that relationship post-sale. So that way, you know, we look at all of our partnerships as a strategic relationship as opposed to just a one-and-done situation, regardless of which partnership model they end up choosing to work with us on.
And I love that. And, you know, because really a lot of times, Andrew, we have, you know, this being the marketing stir, we have people in marketing. You are at a company that does marketing. You're on the sales side, right? It's kind of like myself. That's why I was like, let's get this perspective, because you can talk about a variety of different things about Basis. Now, Basis before that, Centro, correct?
Is called? Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. And so tell us, Andrew, how did you get into, was it marketing first and then sales? How'd you get started? Is this what you studied? I'm always curious to hear.
Yeah, so I did. I studied marketing and management at the University of Albany, and I was a minor in journalism. And, you know, I actually wasn't sure what I wanted to do after college. I was one of those people that just didn't want to graduate. But unfortunately, everyone, you know, has to graduate at some point. So I was planning on going back to grad school in an MBA program for human resources, just because they didn't have anything in marketing. But I needed an internship in between. So my dad happened to work at Group M, which completely unrelated to any of the marketing operations. He works in business continuity. So he's the guy who tells you, you don't have to go in when it's snowing. So
yeah, very different.
But I took an internship at Zaxis, which, you know, at the time was their programmatic buying unit. The brand name is now Sunset, but it was pretty famous at the time. And I interned for the sales department and got to see what that was like. And so about midway through, I realized, you know, this could be a better fit for me. I thought it was really interesting, the digital media and how it was evolving so quickly, programmatic. And so I was basically like, towards the end of it, I was like, okay, well, I'll drop out of this program. The program I was enrolled in, and I was like, all right, I'm ready to get called up to the big leagues. But my manager at the time was like, not so fast. That's not quite how it works. You have to start from the bottom, which is what I did as an associate, and then worked my way up. So it took me a couple of years, but eventually I got back into sales. And now, you know, I worked at sales at Zaxis for a while, and then I made a move over here to Basis. And I essentially do the same thing. The main difference being is that now I'm also selling software as opposed to just managed services. And so, yeah, so your point, my job kind of sits at this intersection of marketing and sales.
Well, you know, you have your story is kind of similar in a way where for me, I studied, I went to, you know, SUNY Oswego, right? We have a lot, you know, in common there, right? The SUNY system, great, shout out. And I was a communications, mass media, broadcasting. My minor was marketing and theater. And I'm like, between this, the podcast, this, what I'm doing, and comedy, right? That I'm doing everything that I study. But a lot of people were like, oh man, your personality, you're going to be in sales, dude. You're going to be great in sales. And I was like, when you tell that to a college kid, you're like, what? You know? And I love this aspect of, I love what I do. I've been doing this for 23 years since I graduated college, 24 years. And it's been great. But one thing I haven't done, I have a lot of ideas. I'm always talking, Andrew. People hear me talking a little too much a lot of times. I never wrote a book, right? I've never even thought about writing a book. I have a lot of ideas. If I wrote a book, it would be something else. It'd be about my childhood and how awful that was and how I'm doing well now, but not sales. So tell me about what, and then we'll get into Basis in a moment, because I have a lot of questions there. But talk to me about deciding to write this book, what it's about, and the process.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, I was a journalism minor. I thought perhaps I might become a writer one day. But my first class I walked into, the teacher said he was 37 years old, and he went here, and he'll be paying off student loans for the rest of his life. The next teacher said that this is a dying major. You'll be working long hours for little pay.
Jeez, talk about inspiration, right?
Yes, exactly. So I was like, okay, you know, that might not be a route for me career-wise. You know, it's not good when the teacher is basically discouraging people to go into the field. So your question was about how to get into the writing book. I thought, I always kind of thought perhaps I'd be writing a book at some point in my life. I didn't know when. I certainly didn't think it was going to be this soon. But I did. The reason why I wrote the book is because, you know, when I first started in sales, like a lot of people, I didn't receive any formal training, no formal sales training, right? So I feel like a lot of companies do provide product training, but a lot of times salespeople are learning how to sell on their own. And what that entails is a lot of like trial and error, right? And the way I learned it was I read a bunch of sales books, I interviewed top sales reps, and I learned by doing. So a lot of mistakes in the beginning of my career. And so I always kind of felt like I basically wrote the book that I wish I had when I first started. So compiling all of the best insights that I got from like the 50 or so books that I've read, all, you know, I interview top salespeople all the time, and I compiled it into what has worked best for me starting from day one. Cause that was the one thing that I didn't have, which was like, all right, it's your first day in a sales job. Where do you start? Right. And so that's what I wrote, which was, I just started about 6-7 months ago. I just started writing all of my sales processes down because I also always wanted to consolidate all of my learnings from, because what I started realizing was there is a process to what I do for every single deal. And so I just started writing down all of what I do, starting from day one day, and just kept writing and kept writing and kept writing. And it turned into a 10-step process, which I wrote a full 120,000 words in less than a month and a half, because it just started flowing out of me. But that's way too long to be a book. So it actually turned into two books. One is the pre-sale and one is the post-sale. But it starts on your first day in sales and it ends with you closing the contract. And it takes through all of the best practices that I've learned over the last, you know, 9 years of my career working in sales. And so I basically wrote it so that way people that are like me that start out in sales and they don't have that hands-on training can learn everything that I've learned and have the hindsight of all the trials and tribulations that are involved with the sales career.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, you know, and for me, it's like I, on the job training, my own style, I received Miller-Hyman training, Sandler method training, you know, and you pull from those, Andrew, but really like my style is, you know, I relationships and I'm very honest, sometimes too honest. I'm like, I don't think you need that. Despite that being maybe a high price ticket, it's more. And I think that's the reason why partners stay with me for a long time. And I've been in this industry a long time. So it's that. So is this book for the grizzled sales vet who's just, you know, you see them at conferences, they're still working the booth, they're, you know, 73 years old, which is okay to, you know, but it, or the a new way of selling, or for those young people like how you and I were, you're still young, but how I was coming out when people were telling me, well, you know, you'll have a nice career in sales, and but not having that paperwork, not having that literature to study from. What are your thoughts there?
Well, you're plenty young still, so don't sell yourself short.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
So who it's for? It's for really for both of those two that you had just mentioned, right? And not to sound like cliche, right? But I think that the crux of the book, and I hear you, like I read a lot of sales books as well, and I've read, you know, The Challenger Sale and all of these books, Financial Prospecting, you know, all of the most popular ones I've read, How to Win Friends and Influence People, all these ones, and they've all been very influential. The challenge that I was seeing was that they were primarily written 10 years ago or more, and they're written by former salespeople, right? They're not written by people that are active salespeople, and I've come to learn why. It's very difficult to do both. But the more important thing is that the sales role itself has evolved so dramatically, even just in my career, but definitely in the last 20 years, where it's no longer the golf outings and the steak dinners that makes a good salesperson, right? It's somebody who is a domain expert who really understands the industry and is always learning more and more about their industry, because what the role is it's an advisor. That's kind of, I think, what you were getting at before, which is your role as an advisor, it's meant to help clients make the best decisions possible. And so because of that, the very first step in my book is to become an expert. Become an expert not just on in your field, that's super important, that's table stakes, but also on your company and all of your offerings, of course, and then your clients and prospects' companies as well. So understanding their business model is critically important to do the full sales cycle. And so to answer your question, why is it meant for both? Well, it starts on your first day, and it teaches how to do the, from my experience, what it takes to be a top salesperson in 2024 heading into 2025, which is crazy in the post-pandemic AI-driven virtual world that we're living in, which has evolved so much, right? I mean, I can't tell you the last time I saw several of my clients in person. It's all over Zoom or Teams, right? Like, I see them very rarely, but most of my clients are scattered around the country. And most of my teammates are scattered around the country. It's a different way of doing business than even 5 years ago when I was taking the subway to come visit them. A lot of them are also not in person. So I'm, as an active salesperson, I felt I have a unique perspective to be able to write what it's like to be a salesperson today and what it's like to be a top salesperson today. Because it's not just my ideas. Like I said, I regularly interview top salespeople from across my company and across the industry to see what they're doing well. And I try to apply it in my own job and see what works best. And I include all of those practices in the book. So if you're an older person and you've been in sales for a while, you know, there's, it could help with upskilling in terms of the modern day, how to leverage technology and automation and AI to enhance your job and be more efficient at it, while giving a quick, you know, giving basically a good refresher on what is, in my opinion, the description of a modern top salesperson in this world that we're living in, which, like I mentioned, is an advisor, is somebody who acts as an extension of their clients' teams and is meant to help with guiding them, whether that's in their best interest or not. Like, that's what you were getting at, Vince. And that's why I think that you succeeded in sales.
Well, yeah, you know, and I love a little bit of the, you know, old school and new school, right? The old school is I love being in person. I love meeting prospects and clients and partners and coworkers in person. That's where I really shine, I think, in front of people. But also this world, Andrew, where it's changed. It's not transactional anymore. It's advisor. It's also what I love about, you know, some things that the pandemic did, and I don't love the pandemic, obviously, but what I love about what it did is 5 years ago, you didn't do video calls. You did the freeconferencecall.com and you never talked to them. And it was, so now you get to see people. So yeah, there's a lot of aspects of it. One more question about the book, and then I want to talk about some trends that you're seeing at Basis. So talk to us about the balance, right? I know for me, a lot of different things I have in my life and things that I do with myself and my family. How did you balance out writing the book? And then how does your company feel about you writing the book?
Yeah, so they've been very supportive of it. You know, I like to think of myself as a thought leader within the organization. We have a very good system where we do share best practices. You know, it's very much about the sales process. And not so much about the specifics, right? I'm not like talking about any specifics as it pertains to anything related to my company, but it's the book that teaches the sales process that I use that I didn't receive, right? We do get product training all the time. And I feel like a lot of companies do, but the sales process itself, I think, is not something that's taught enough. And I've seen that and experienced it in my own situations where I've been in meetings with salespeople and I'm just like, you got to start asking more questions, right? Like, you got to understand whether any of this is relevant to us. Some people do it very well and others don't. But this book teaches you how, in my estimation, is the most effective way to handle that sales process. But to your question, how do you balance it? It's very difficult. It's a lot of work. Luckily for me, I'm in a position right now, I don't have a family and kids. So I don't have as much responsibility. Don't have a dog, much to my wife's dismay. That may change soon enough, but this is like a time in my life where my only real responsibilities are my job. And so I have a little extra time, but that's not to say that this has been at all an easy process for me. And I understand totally why people don't do it. I've been waking up at 4 a.m. every day to do it before work, pulling all nighters. There's so much that goes into it, and not just about the book itself. You also have to promote the book and get the people to actually know who you are and such. So I'm learning a lot of stuff that I kind of wish that I knew when I first graduated college that I should have known. And I've always wanted to learn, but I never really bothered because I didn't have that incentive, which is build your own website, start building your own personal brand, YouTube channel, stuff like that. you know, actually using Google Analytics for my own website. It's a different perspective. And then also getting into paid media. That's a different when you're doing it for yourself and, you know, you have to use your credit card. Different story. You know, it's been a challenge balancing it, but I've also gotten a lot of value out of doing this process because what it's allowed me to do is solidify the processes that I do regularly, right? So you go about your processes, you do your day job and stuff like that, but you don't ever really take a step back and say, okay, why do I do the things I do? And what are the steps that I typically take? And that's what it's allowed me to do is really solidify that. And it turned out that I follow this 10-step process from every single deal that I work on. And I have a formula that I use, which takes in both the art of sales and the science of sales, which is the combination. And that's how you succeed while building that expertise, providing value. These are the type of things that I think was very helpful for taking a step back and putting it all down in paper, which is the main reason why I started writing them down to begin with, because I wanted to consolidate my learnings in one place.
No, it's very interesting. And, you know, it's for people, it's Top Sales Producer, How to Crush Your Sales Quota. We'll put a link in the description of the podcast. Let's get into basis now. So let's talk about you mentioned self-serve and managed service. Are you seeing a shift to one or the other? I know it's Starista. I would say, you know, managed service tends to be a little bit more, but talk to us about that. What are you seeing there, Andrew?
So, I mean, it really depends, of course, in terms of what resources that you have available at your company, whether it makes sense to in-house or not. Also depends, are you an advertiser or are you an agency, right? I primarily work with agencies, so I'll speak from that perspective. A big part of the reason why I came to Basis in the first place was because a lot of my clients and prospects were bringing this in-house, bringing programmatic in-house. All we were able to do at the time was programmatic managed services. But I increasingly got two questions. One, can you handle search and social for me as well? Because it's not just programmatic. People that do paid digital media do all forms of paid digital media, which the answer was no at the time. And then two is, can we license your platform to buy ourselves? And the answer was also no at the time. And so, you know, I think that trend was, especially for larger agencies, for ones that have the resources, mid-sized to larger agencies, they're the ones that have the resources to be able to dedicate a team and team members to bringing programmatic and other forms of paid digital media in-house, whereas some of the more the smaller, maybe less technically savvy agencies, so agencies that perhaps don't specialize in paid media, then they could really benefit from having a team that does it on their behalf. Advertisers, same thing. So it all depends on the makings of the agency, what resources are available, and what their business objectives are. Is this even a key part of their business? Is it something that they want to grow into the future? If so, I think it does benefit them to bring it in-house if they have the resources available. Again, always on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. You know, we're seeing that too, where I would say like a lot of the agencies, especially those who have multiple clients, they have someone there dedicated, like to go in, fiddle around, self-serve, multiple campaigns, maybe those direct advertisers, like the managed service aspect of it, who may not be working with an agency. So yeah, that totally makes sense. Andrew, talk to us about, I remember Basis as Centro. The rebrand, when did that take place? What were some of the reasoning behind it, if you could add?
Yeah, 2001 is when the rebrand took place. The reasoning behind it was, so when Centro was built in back 20 years ago, back in 2001, the model was very different than it is today. Back then, it was really about providing an extra set of hands to do really local media buying was the bread and butter at the time. So agencies were prime when they had advertisers, they may have like lots of brick and mortar stores. It was a very big challenge to buy publishers in the local markets. And so the technology that we had at the time was helpful to streamline that process. And we were primarily doing managed services. So we were running those campaigns on their behalf. And the platform that we were using streamlined that workflow. But as the business has evolved over the years, as programmatic became popular, it made that process of buying local media buying a little bit easier to do it through a demand side platform. So Basis purchased a company called SiteScout, which is the largest DSP in Canada at the time, and integrated into the workflow automation tool that we were already using, rebuilt the platform completely from scratch. So that way it's one user interface that's built on one piece of code, digitally native platform. And Basis was born basically when I started at the company, which is around 2018. I started 2019. There were really, that was some of the earlier iterations of it. But when we would go into meetings, we would talk more and more about Basis, and our business model shifted from more of a managed services to more of a self-service. Now we still do both, but increasingly clients were licensing our platform to execute media in-house. And again, we'd always talk about Basis, and it was a little bit confusing in the marketplace for two reasons. One is because people still associated the central brand name with local media buying, which is not what we did anymore as a primary service. And then two, it's like, well, if you talk about Basis, well, your name is Centro. This, you know, you don't see the Trade Desk being named something else, right? It kind of makes sense to reintroduce the Basis brand name into the marketplace with our new business model, which is the Basis platform. And so just to add clarity to the marketplace, nothing really changed with the rebrand. But that was the rationale and the reasoning why we did it back in 2021.
And Andrew, I want to ask you about some trends that you're seeing. But before that, look, I have a fellow salesperson here. I'm always curious because, again, walking around Ad Week, seeing Basis, you working with agencies, is it a mix of, is your company just getting a lot of incoming leads because of all the work that your marketing team is doing? Plus the fact that maybe you have your own account-based system that you're using. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so Basis really, this is a change for this year. Historically, hadn't done a ton of marketing in the way that we are now. And so I think that it's still a little bit to be decided because it is such a new strategy, whether like what impact will have in terms of inbound leads. But you know, you understand how it is. It is a very competitive industry. It is very difficult to differentiate yourself. Clients have tons of options. A lot of people sound the same. And so outbound is always going to be the primary driver of business meetings. You know, it's not like we're like Google or Amazon where it's like, you know, you don't really have a choice but to work with them sort of thing. It's one of those things where you have to differentiate yourself, and to win someone's attention is always going to require some level of outbound.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's the most for us, like at least myself, it's all about relationships, getting yourself out there. We do a lot in the marketing world and people start to know who we are, but it's I was just curious there.
And that's the point too, right? It's the branding element of it. It's the introducing Basis, even though the brand's been around for 3 years, that's nothing in the grand scheme of things. So introducing a Basis brand name to the marketplace is another key reason why we're doing those events and sponsorships.
Yeah, no, it makes sense because you got to drive it out there. Yeah, there's a few companies in our industry that had name brands in the industry that kind of shifted over, and it's like almost reintroducing yourself. Whereas like Strista has kind of been steady and growing as we grow. So yeah, no, totally makes sense. Talk to us about some of the trends. We have all these marketers listening. Talk to us about some of the trends you're seeing just overall.
I think the biggest trend for me that I've seen and has been the case for 5 years, if not longer, is the shift from linear TV to connected TV. And that has really ramped up over the last 2 years as Netflix, Disney, Amazon Prime have come out with their own ad-supported versions, have been driving people to them. And by raising prices of their premium ad-supported, there was clearly a shift in the streaming world of going from the purely subscription-based, no ads, to an ad-supported model. You know, right now, today, I think that if you wanted to buy Netflix without ads, it'd be like $20. right? Versus $20 a month versus the $7 that they're charging for their ad supported. Most people are going to opt for the ad supported, right? Similar setup with Disney, Amazon, you don't even have a choice. It went from being free, no ads, to now if you want no ads, you have to spend $3 more a month. Most people are not choosing to do that. And so now what you have is basically there was a shortage of supply from a shortage of a supply for advertisers in the connected TV space prior to this, where there was a lot of demand and a lot of consumer viewership, but not enough ways to reach them because most people watch Netflix, who has the biggest audience without ads. Disney, you know, there's a big audience without ads. And the same thing with Amazon. So, you know, those are three of the biggest platforms. Peacock's always had ads. Hulu's always been an ad-supported version. Max, too, has ads now. So now what you're seeing is this opening up of supply in combination with the fact that more and more people are cord-cutting. That trend has not slowed down. And so people are shifting over, and now advertisers have a way to reach them like they haven't before. And it opens up this basically the world of linear TV, which has been dominant. You know, $70 billion industry 5 years ago. Now it's steadily declining. I think it's probably in the mid-50s. Whereas Connect TV was in the low 20s, despite more people watching connected TV than cable. Again, because the ads supported versions that have come out, people are increasingly opting for those. That's what you're seeing is now you're seeing a steady growth in connected TV in terms of advertising. And dollars are shifting over there as well. So it will surpass it in the next few years.
Yeah, we're seeing that too. It's a trend where, again, you know, we just spoke about it at Adweek, but connected TV and also a lot of non-traditional clients or marketers moving in that direction. We're seeing a lot of nonprofit. We're seeing B2B going to connected TV, right? Yeah, I'm at the office. You might be at home, reaching the business executive in his or her living room. Are you seeing that shift as well, Andrew?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's no previous way to, if you're a B2B or B2C for that matter, there was no way to be targeted really on the TV screen before this. So with something like B2B, where it only makes sense for a subset of the population, well, TV maybe didn't make sense to reach the masses before what is now the capability, which is the ability to leverage data and to target people that are in your target audience. I get constant ad tech ads on Hulu and such. And that was very new, right? You never saw personalized messaging on the TV screen before. Now that that is possible, it makes more sense for advertisers that do only make sense for a subset of the population to utilize the TV screen as a marketing marketing platform.
You know, and a lot of companies now, because of connected TV, you don't need $1 million to make a commercial, right? I always love those like local commercials. I'm Rick from Rick's Pesticide. I'm like, this is hilarious. And it's, you know, you could do it. There's companies out there that can design videos, 15 minute animated. So it makes it a lot easier. So it's great to see that. Andrew, with just a few minutes left, we have to ask this one question if we ever miss it. Boy, do our listeners get mad. It's our LinkedIn question. Now, this is a unique perspective because, you know, you and I think differently than maybe a CMO where they're getting constantly bombarded with messaging. LinkedIn, a message that resonates with you and a message that you just hate, you never respond to.
Way more of the messages that I don't like, right? I'm sure we all get it. You get tons of those automated messages that are just so clearly not handwritten, right? It's just, it goes out to everybody. It's not personalized. Those are, you know, those, no one looks at those. I mean, to be honest, like unless, and here's the thing is I thought about this question and the way I would answer it is less about the content of the post or the message, even though that's important and you should personalize it. So to answer your question, it would be the more personalized messages, the ones that are, hey, congratulations on your recent promotion, or hey, you know, I saw you had a birthday recently, happy birthday, or, you know, we're both in the same group or what have you, right? Something that is clear that they actually took the time to look at my LinkedIn page before they reached out. And it's not just an automated message, although increasingly automated messages are becoming more and more personalized. But you could still tell, in my opinion, when it's a human reaching out versus when it's a machine. And so I think that it is more about who you're reaching out and when, who you're reaching out to and when, versus the message itself, right? Because if you think about it, it's like if you're in market for something, if you are actively looking for a connected TV provider, and then a connected TV provider reaches out to you and, you know, says, we have this solution for you. Now, that message is going to be much more relevant, and it's going to be, you know, potentially to be answered, versus when you combine it with the fact that it's human reaching out to you, versus when it's completely irrelevant to you, right? So it's about reaching the right people at the right time. And that requires some research. Mass outreach is just not going to cut it. Like, you're just going to have a ton of waste. And so the messages that I appreciate are the ones which are hyper relevant to my situation and are clearly written by a human and are not too wordy.
Yep. No, I agree. Some of them, those personalized ones, are getting a little crazy. And it's like, you got to do your research. I got one from someone I've known personally for years. And I'm like, wait, you know me. Wait, are you using a bot on me? And it just, like, I called them out and they're like, oh, sorry, I'm just using this new thing. I'm like, well, do better. But so, Andrew, before we give you a closing thought and give you the floor here, talk to us about, we'd like to get to know you personally. Tell us what you like to do on the weekends. You're a fellow New Yorker like me, right? You live in the New York area. What are your weekends like nowadays? That the book is done, right? Is the book done? So now you could focus on the dog. You could focus on other things.
The book is done, but the real work starts when the book is done, because you got to do tons of promotion, getting it out. Like, there's designing the cover is the thing I'm currently working on. But so I'm at that age, right, where everybody's getting married. There's, you know, baby showers, all this stuff, right? It's that age where, like, I went to 5 weddings this year. We have another one coming up. I went to like 6 or something last year. So I very rarely have free weekends. When I do, like, going to the beach, you know, like to just relax from a hobby standpoint. I've been looking for a hobby for a good decade now. So if you have any recommendations, I'd love to hear it. I know I need one, but I don't have one. What I do during the week after work is I go to a boxing. So I just do a local rumble. I'm here in Hoboken. There's one right down the street. I used to do sparring back before the pandemic happened, but I started realizing it's not the best for you. So I still do boxing. It's a lot of fun, and that would be my hobby / what I do after work.
That's awesome. And a final thought for our listeners: anything you want to share, ad, website? You tell us.
One of the things that I see people doing not enough is. Salespeople, I mean, is providing value. It's very, a lot of times I see the people being very selfish with their outreach, and they are thinking about themselves. When you're asking for time, they're thinking about themselves. They're not thinking about the actual person they're reaching out to. One of the things that I like to do that I recommend doing is to, before you reach out to anybody, and it's okay, like it's our job. We have to reach out. We have to try to secure time and stuff, but think about what you can provide them as value, right? Like, be a resource first. Provide insights, provide case studies, articles that are relevant, something that will actually help them do their job better. Then whatever you send after, a request afterwards, is going to be a lot more, you know, they're going to be more open to setting up time and stuff because you're giving them a reason. I don't think that happens enough. And then the last thing I'll say is just a little plug. I have a script that I used to secure meetings, meeting next steps. In every single meeting, it's one of the things that I see people run into most, including myself, which is deals that get stalled. And so the best way to prevent that from happening, in my experience, is to actually secure next steps while you're in the meeting that you're currently in. And I have a script that I use that has consistently secured next steps. It takes a few minutes. You can find it, download it free at my website, andrewbarbuto.com/meetinghacks.
And that's Barbuto. And yeah, that's great advice. Thank you, Andrew, for joining us today, giving us a sales and marketing perspective, which I think we very much needed. That's Andrew Barbuto, Basis Technologies, also author, top sales producer, How to Crush Your Sales Quota. That will give you the link to pre-order that. This has been amazing. That's Andrew. AJ will be back next time. Come see us at the Silver Apple Awards. I'm Vincent Petrofessa. Thank you so much for listening to The Marketing Stir, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to The Marketing Stir podcast by Stirista. Please like and subscribe. If you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, please email us at themarketingstir@stirista.com.